We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run Finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
In fact, you'd probably have to go back to the game he referenced, Game 5 of the 2016 Finals, to find the last time he explicitly hurt his team in an important situation with actions where you could argue he could have better controlled himself. And even that, I mean, I'm kind of with him on it. That I'm not going to excuse that. He should have controlled himself better in that situation. But at least that situation featured like a pretty triggering incident that he responded to in a way that would not have been such a problem if not for all the previous, you know, issues that had happened earlier in the playoffs. Like, that was a matter of accumulating technical foul points such that one pretty innocuous play got him suspended. And again, I'm not letting him off the hook, but this really was a situation where he got mad, got a technical that maybe he should have got, maybe he shouldn't have gotten, and then in an otherwise totally controllable moment, completely lost touch with the situation, the score, and himself, and basically blew the game for his team. That is as dramatic a lost my temper and messed it up for the team situation as I can think of with any player. And I wouldn't expect that to happen again, but I didn't expect it to happen the first time or this time. So maybe, you know, it's on Draymond Green now to live up to the apology he gave, to make good on the concept that we all believe that he said out loud that he knows better than this, and to never see it again. And I do think he can make that happen. It doesn't mean you won't have technical fouls you don't love, but this is a specific situation, and I would be a little surprised if we see that again, or even something very close to it.
Draymond talking to the media. Go ahead, Ray.
No, I was just going to say, it is also instructive that it happened on a night when neither Curry nor Thompson was available to just grab him and calm him down. Because I don't think that anybody else on the floor at that point felt, if they had time to process it, felt like, I got to get in the way of Draymond here.
Well, Steve had a hold of him when he got the second technical. So I don't know that anybody could have stopped him. But
maybe somebody could have stopped him before the first one happens. I mean, I think there's a level of sort of moral authority that a fellow veteran has that guys who've just been with the team for 9 weeks maybe don't.
True.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I mean, it's also self-control, keyword being self.
It's on him first, no question.
Shouldn't take another man to tell Draymond how to order his dinner. He's big enough to know how to do that now. Here he is today talking to the media, issuing a mea culpa. Talked about the perspective that he had on the Charlotte game after a couple nights to sleep about it, and he wasn't happy with himself, nor should he have been. Here's Draymond Green.
My perspective is it's changed over the past couple of days. I'd say immediately after that game, I was kind of pissed off, you know, just on my feelings of the whole situation, you know, how the first tech went down, you know, more so than the second tech were my initial feelings. And anger that came from the situation. As I sat and I thought about the situation and reassessed, you know, as I had time to let the whole thing marinate and digest, I was dead ass wrong. And not that I was wrong, like I said, for the first tech per se, but once whatever that situation is, once I have the first tech, I can't get the second tech. And so I was a bit disappointed. I'm still a bit disappointed in myself because, you know, I think that whole situation bothered me more than being suspended from game five of the NBA Finals in 2016.
I mean, I don't even want to get into the relitigating the NBA Finals ejection, but the fact that he says this is weighing on me is like an admission that, hey, I should have learned this lesson. I have not learned this lesson, and that's why I'm doubly disappointed today in myself. And look, we can only hope that Draymond gets it right. Draymond is the mood ring of the entire organization, and you never want to rob him of his on-court joie de vivre that makes him Draymond Green, but you also just cannot have him the, I can't control myself. Like, somebody hold me back. Like, that guy's just, he should not rear his head this late into his career. It's just that simple. No. That's it. Yeah.
I mean, a part of this is also just like you're 30, 31 years old, man. Like, get a hold of yourself. Right. You say that to your friend at the bar acting a fool. You know what I mean? Like, you're past the point where we can say, well, he's emotional, and just let it go.
Right. These are mistakes made by children. We ain't children anymore. Let's act like it.
Yeah. And one other thing, I mean, throughout the history of the NBA, one of the things that veterans were sort of tasked with learning was how to get along with officials so that the benefit of the doubt could sometimes work in your favor. And I don't know that he's necessarily applied much time to that. And it's
a skill.
Do you
know that he hasn't, though?
I don't know that. But, you know, it seems to me that at least the way the NBA has always worked is that you get a level of leeway the longer you've been at it. If you sort of come at officials on a regular basis more respectfully, if not sort of, you know, with your head down and being a supplicant, you can be that everything that Draymond is, you know, and still win over officials, you know, or at least know what their hair triggers are, because they're all a little bit different. And that's why they all liked older officials, even if they were ones that lost a step. It's why Joey Crawford, for as much of a temper lunatic as he was a guy that most players liked, because they knew what you were going to get from him. And what they want more than anything else is a level of consistency and reliance on what that official is going to be. And you do that by sort of learning the official. And I don't know, I mean, I don't have empirical proof, but I don't know that Draymond has invested a whole lot of time in that. I think he looks at all officials as the same. And I think that's one of the things that sort of gives him the idea that, you know, I don't need to work the officials. All I need to do is just lose my temper.
I see. I don't think that's true at all. And we're both speculating here. So I have no better idea of this than you do. But from what I see watching, I feel like he does know referees are all different. And I feel like certain referees he definitely has different relationships with, where it seems clear he either feels he doesn't need to get all nutty, or he's just happens to be better behaved that night. But I've seen him have perfectly calm conversations with officials, and I do think that may have been part of the problem here, as one of our earlier callers suggested, because I do think, and someone can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe the initial technical was called by one of the referees who might be in his first year in the NBA on that staff. And that's why, to me, again, I have some sympathy there. And where Draymond really screws up is by losing his temper after that call and drawing the second tech that gets him tossed out. And I think that's sort of what he's saying in that soundbite, too. That's where he's acknowledging, that's just something I can't do. I can be upset inside. I can be angry that I got a technical that I still don't feel was earned. But as a veteran, as an adult, I have to not then lose my temperature and hurt my team further.
Well, according to the official NBA box score, both the technical fouls were given by Mark Lindsay, who's a veteran.
And they were given by Lindsay.
What?
Both of them were by Lindsay.
Yes, according to the box score.
Interesting. Okay.
John Conley teed him up too, but you know, as I look at it, it's the two technical fouls were by Lindsay, and the ejection was done by the crew chief. So it might have been all three of them saw what they saw.
Huh. Okay.
Here's the official advice. You can get more flies with honey than vinegar. Stop being a douchebag. It's just that simple. Just quit being an on-court douchebag. You can be as intense a competitor.
Don't be a douchebag with 9.3 seconds left in a tie game.
Yeah, just don't at no point be a douchebag to an NBA official. Doesn't serve you right. There's no investment in douchebaggery today that'll pay off for you tomorrow.
I think this speaks to a much bigger issue, in fact, to that point, which is the level of discourse between NBA players and officials has devolved considerably over my lifetime. And the general way that guys flip out after every single call. And look, in this case, I would probably argue that Draymond was in the right in terms of whether it was a bad call or not. But,
look, this is a league. There are so many calls. Flopping.
Right. There are so many calls in this game. I would say that the biggest problems with the NBA, and I was listening to Bill Simmons and our friend Ryan Russillo talk about this on a podcast today, and I totally agree with them. The biggest problems are that they have these interminable reviews late that are often not getting the call right and also ruin the flow of the game. And they have a league where every single player complains about every single call to the point where none of them have any credibility. When a player turns around and throws his hands up in the air like, oh my God, after a foul call or a non-foul call, after the number of times I've seen those replays show the player is blatantly lying, how could any of them have any credibility?
Right.
It looks like a bunch of dudes whining. It's not fun to watch.
It's not the little boy who cried wolf. It's the entire nursery school crying wolf. It's every little boy crying wolf.
It's basically the verbal equivalent of flopping. You're trying to steal something that you don't deserve.
And for me, that's the biggest thing the NBA should be addressing is behavior from players that is designed to game the referees, as Ray is saying.
Well, but here's the problem, and I'm not arguing with you because I think that's a laudable goal, is that in the last 5 or 6 years, most of the guys that you would see working finals and conference finals have basically been sort of, you know, either retired or eased out, and they're replaced by younger officials who tend to want to call by the book because that's what their supervisors want to see. And so if they make a mistake, you know, one, their common sense is taken away from them because they have to walk over and do the replay dance 15 times. It makes more officials cowards because they don't want to, you know, have to do that all the time. They would rather be able to use their common sense. And the one thing that the NBA has done, like, really, in your lifetime, Matt, you use the right words, is, you know, they've taken away the ability of officials to use common sense. You know, I mean, if Mark Lindsay had not called that first technical foul, he'd have heard it from the league office on Sunday morning, because they micromanage everything instead of allowing, you know, officials who have been around for a while, you know, figure out what the flow of the game is and work within that flow. You know, the flows gets broken up all the time now for any number of reasons. One, you know, it's players bitching about everything and, you know, replays, all of it. It's just they basically made officials to be not traffic cops, but traffic lights. And traffic lights don't work.
Somebody on the text line says, you know, AAU has taught players to argue with officials. Look, I tell you that there's an awful lot that just tells everyone in society, whatever you don't like, complain about it as loud as you can at the top of your voice. And look, I don't want to spend too much time on this, but an inglorious moment was caught this weekend between, you know, Cam Newton and that high school senior, where a kid is at a guy's camp and he's yelling, "You're a free agent, like you're washed." I didn't live in a world where that ever was an option. Like, who would have ever done that at a player's camp that they were attending? And honestly, I'm not telling you that anyone on the side of this coin did well. Just like I'm telling you that no one at the end of that basketball game did it well. The Draymond sucked in that moment. The officials sucked in that moment. And they both screwed it up. I'm going to say the same thing about Cam and this kid. The kid is obviously, it's a cry for help. What it really is. That kid needs a hug. He needs a dad in his life. He needs something to show that this is not how you talk to people in public. What's wrong with you? And then Cam Newton needs to figure out a better way to talk to a kid other than standing on his own wallet, which is incredibly gross and disgusting, and trying to put zeros and commas on the kid. What you need to do is put your arm around that kid, pull him away from his I'm showing off for my friends moment, and say, what's really wrong with you, man? Like, this is, I'm Cam Newton. I'm here to like help you out and talk to you today. This is, why are you behaving like this? And I'm sure the kid would have been like, well, man, I'm sorry. Like, I don't know. I was showing off for my friends or social media. Like it, we're surrounded by a generation of people who think they either got to entertain or trend or be provocative. Like, not everybody can be an agent provocateur. Like, I mean, what an inglorious moment for everybody involved in that. It's so sad, man. And I honestly, like, old Damon, before I had kids, Damon would have been like, kids lucky Cam didn't hit him. That's the end of that segment. Now I look at it like, it's just so sad. We need to teach people to just be better to each other.
Yeah, look, I mean, frankly, as far as the Cam thing goes, I think he was put in a brutal situation where it's hard for him to get a win because anything he says, never, you know, you're right. Standing on your wallet to a teenager is a bad look, but anything he says to come back at the kid's a bad look. And the kid was clearly in troll mode, so like there was no actual talking to that kid in that moment. But I also kind of think we're maybe making a little bit too much of a, 15, 16-year-old boy being a bit of a dick. Like that's where sure. I come from, even in the best of times, that happened a lot of times every single day. So at the end of the day, I think that's a whole lot about nothing. But I don't want to write off the NBA's failures on a bunch of entitled young athletes, because I don't – like that may or may not be true, but I don't think it matters. The NBA can solve these problems, because if the next 10 guys who throw their hands up in exasperation about a call – and won't stop whining about it, all get technicals, watch how fast everyone stops complaining about every call. It's the same thing as the three-point jumper foul that has now gotten way out of control, right? They put that rule in because, well, let's not use the local example. Because guys like Bruce Bowen were running out at normal three-point shooters and awkwardly, abnormally sticking their feet where the shooter's feet were about to go in an attempt, I'll even be nice about it, in a play that at the very least we can say was reckless with the other person's health. What we now have is guys redesigning the jump shot to spring 5 feet forward so that you can't close out on them while they're shooting. That's not hard to fix. The rule is no longer serving the original purpose, but you have to adjust. And the NBA seems too reluctant to adjust to some of these obvious issues.
And we're coming sort of full circle on our long-held officiating debate, wherein I basically say they don't know how to train officials anymore. You know, to be able to say, you did the Bruce Bowen, we're going to punish you for that. You know, it is, we're not going to do that. We have to look at three replays and then, you know, figure out what it is. I mean, just officials in the past, that didn't happen in the past, and I don't want to sit there and glorify 40 years ago, but that didn't happen in the distant past because officials were allowed to take care of it on the spot. You know, they just go, it's a dangerous play, you know, it's two, or it's two on the ball, you know, and make the punishment, you know, disproportionate to that particular crime, because that particular crime is dealing with the safety of players' ability to play the game.
It's all about
they don't
precedent.
Do that anymore, and that's why you get what you're getting now. It's just they don't trust the officials to handle the play at the time, and they don't train them so that they could be trusted. So, yeah, it is absolutely on the league. You're right, Matt. The league has failed to do this, and they failed to do it persistently for the last 15 years.
Yeah. You know, you want to talk about player empowerment? That's really how you have empowered players. It's not so much roster mobility as their ability to manipulate in-game situations and officiating situations. And the league really has neutered its main line of defense for stopping this nonsense, which, of course, are the officials. We move on real quickly because the Seattle Mariners have a huge job opening today, and there's a little bit of a follow-up. Like we said, it's all about precedent here, guys. Mariners CEO Kevin Mather, today, well, he was talking to a Rotary club and said so many stupid things to get him and position the entire team as inglorious themselves, where he's complaining about interpreters, where he's complaining about guys not being able to acclimate to English fast enough for his liking. And then, I mean, let's be totally honest as far as baseball is concerned. Forget about all the racial stereotypes that guy walked himself right into. That's his problem. His words became baseball problems when he started talking about tinkering with another player's service time. He did. He talked about manipulating a player's service time for the benefit of Seattle. Again, all this guy did was say all the wrong things out loud. We even know that they're true, but you're just not allowed to say them in so many instances. He said them. And Josh Donaldson, fellas, has just tweeted about Kevin Mather, who, by the way, resigned, which is a real nice way to say his ass got fired this afternoon. He says, "Thank you," tweets Josh Donaldson. "Thank you, Kevin Mather. I sincerely mean it. You just said what everyone always knew, but now we, at MLB_players, have official evidence that this is going to help an awful lot of players. Thank you very much for your help. Bravo, sir."
I didn't even think of that earlier, but this has been a huge sticking point with the players' union recently, that teams are artificially manipulating service time, and this idiot just came out and said it.
Yep.
He didn't just say it, though. He said it with a level of pride.
Bragged about it.
Yeah. I mean, here, we're gonna, you know, your kids or your grandkids, depending on the age of the people at the Rotary Club, you know, maybe one of you has a kid who's, you know, in somebody's system. Well, if he's good enough, we're going to try to screw him. What better advertisement for, "Son, we're going to play rugby," than that?
Cubs just went through this with Chris Bryant. I mean, this happens in every major league clubhouse. You know, denying a major league clock ticking is a good way to save money for a later day. And these clubs know it, and players know it, and this guy just admitted to it. And, yeah, precedent, documentation. Thank you very, very much, Kevin Mather. What a breath of fresh air you are. Thank you for this Rotary meeting.
The same league that's been caught how many times putting their collusion down on paper, Ray?
Well, three times in which they went to court and lost and had to pay treble damages. But that's a generation ago. These new geniuses figure they can get around it anyway. I mean, at some point, they're going to have to sit down with the union and do the one thing they never like to do, which is negotiate a more equitable system by which service time is calculated, so that a player who is ready to be in the major leagues by any sort of measurable standard, you know, doesn't get sent to AA because it's convenient for somebody to save $300,000 or put off a big contract by a year. Because if that guy's that good, you're going to pay the money anyway.
Yeah. No, it's that simple.
There's an awful lot of talk about why did Tatis agree to this deal? Because if he had just gone to arbitration and then played all the da-da-da, and then he would have had the da, and then I saw another article about how he actually took out a loan on his future earnings, which he is intent on paying back, and instead of the $350 million after taxes and all this da-da-da-da-da. You're all freaking geniuses. Let me explain what happened. Whenever anyone puts a $300 million contract in front of you, you sign it. No questions asked. Forget about what future earnings might have been. $300 million is about enough. You're not going to need much more than that. the amount of hand-wringing over, well, why did he do it? Why did he do it? Why? He could have done so much more. He could have done so much better. It's the third largest contract.
And it was 340.
The third largest contract in the history of Major League Baseball. The third largest contract. And it's not good enough for everyone? There's still two more worth it. I mean, come on.
And here's the big reveal. Long contracts can be renegotiated upward if the player is that good. So he's not, so to the extent that he is, quote, doomed by this contract, that contract can get changed anytime both sides agree to do it. You know, it's one of the two great lies about reporting on contracts. One is that the money you hear is not typically the money they get. And two, that contracts are largely just suggestions. You know, if you think that Fernando Tatis is going to be a San Diego Padre in 2035, you are swimming against decades of tide in baseball, in any sport. You know, contracts get redone a lot. And sometimes it's to the club's benefit, sometimes it's the player's benefit. So whatever it is he agreed to now, he's content with it, the team's content with it, but that contentment is not perpetual. So relax on it.
In about 15 minutes, we're going to have Matt Barnes stop on by, and we're going to get back into the NBA with him. Until then, just a couple of more things here. Deion Sanders had quite a weekend, guys. He made his Jackson State debut as a head coach. Tremendous debut. I don't know who Edwards Waters is, but he got his ass kicked as Jackson State beat him. 53-0 was your final there. So Jackson State rolls over Edwards Waters. This is the name of the school they beat. Having said that, no one even noticed because somebody broke into the locker room and stole all of Deion Sanders' stuff. At least that's how it was initially reported. His wallet, his keys, his phone all disappeared. An hour later, in a bizarre and stunning turn of events, Jackson State officials announced that Sanders' belongings were never stolen. They'd only been misplaced. Sanders then takes online himself to say that that is not true. They caught someone stealing his stuff red-handed. It looks like the school was maybe manipulating the headlines so they don't look worse that day. I don't know. But welcome to coaching, Deion Sanders. No good deed will ever go unpunished. Here he is taking a very unglamorous job at an historically all-black college that he's trying to help put on the map. And day number one, on what should have been a rousing success story for him, he shows up at his press conference angry, banging on the table because somebody gaffled his stuff. That sucks. Prime deserved better than that.
Yeah, and he probably could have reacted a little bit better in public and raised his hell privately. But, you know, I mean, if he got his stuff back, then we can all move on. It's just, you know, when you make a debut and you open with, my stuff got stolen, so I'm pissed. I mean, you don't get that moment back.
Yeah. He did not react to that well. But at the same time, I would have been a little pissed too. But yeah, he did not sell the program well.
Because you asked, Edward Waters College is a historically black school that belongs to the NAIA. So it was one step below Jackson State.
Right.
Actually, several steps below, I should be honest.
NAIA, you play this game as a warm-up because it's supposed to all have good feelings. And I think he murdered that with his own post-game presser. Of course it sucks. Of course, the bigger culprit is whoever stole his stuff. But to me, that temper tantrum should have been thrown at the school officials who didn't have the Deion Sanders office locked on game day. Because, come on, bro. Like, that's Deion. He's not just some dude who happens to coach Jackson State.
Yeah, you're borrowing his name for your glory.
Exactly. Do you know any other Jackson State head football coaches historically, either of you?
Can't name one.
Me neither.
Not one.
And there's a reason for that. It's because this one is Deion Sanders. Jackson State football never mattered to anybody. That's not true. Jackson State football did not matter in the national football conversation until Deion Sanders got there. So locked the door where all the prime memorabilia and his damn watches that are probably worth the whole endowment of the university are stored. Come on.
Gonna need a lockbox. Put it in a lockbox.
Seriously.
So we have 6 minutes left in today's show. Well, 6 minutes left in today's segment before we get to Matt Barnes to end today's show. But let me run past you four gentlemen, not one, not two, not three, but four suggestions of just a little something to watch since we all sit around on Sundays not watching football anymore. I don't know about you, but I was officially looking for the, all right, I need a little something new to watch. Wife and I, this is approved. Damon and Jillian approval on all of these. I'll start with what is the world's least kept secret. When the entire internet tells you something's good, not half the internet, but the entirety of the internet says something's good, it might be onto something. Ray, have you watched Ted Lasso?
I did, and it did not move me.
Hold on. Ted Lasso is an unbridled, joyous ride of emotion. What could Ray Ratto be less interested in?
Well, yeah, I mean, there is that. It's basically the opposite of how Ray thinks and looks at the world.
Yeah,
but that is
it's just a positive guy being positive, and it's cute and funny. It's for everyone in the world except Ray Ratto.
It mixes sports and vulnerability in a way I've never really seen before. And look, I don't like soccer, so I thought for sure I'm not really going to like this. Look, when 100% of people tell you it's a pretty good show except for Ray, 100% of people except for Ray are right. It was good.
It's lovely.
It was good. Ray, yeah. There is no doubt about there is an element of you that is dead inside and will never be resuscitated. So let me give you something that's definitely going to be more up your speed. The Devil Next Door. These next three are on Netflix. Have you seen The Devil Next Door?
I have not.
It's really good. A Cleveland grandfather, and this is real. It's not. It's a documentary, five-part documentary. A Cleveland grandfather is hauled off to Jerusalem and accused of being Ivan the Terrible, who was like the worst guard at a death camp. And it is fascinating. It all really happened. It's all documentary footage. I highly recommend, if you like a little history, The Devil Next Door. As you watch it, you can't tell if they got it right, if they got it wrong, who's right, who's wrong. It's fascinating. Devil Next Door. Check it out.
Was this the guy from, I want to say it was Ohio or Pennsylvania?
Yes. His name was John
Demjanjuk.
Demjanjuk. Yeah, it's a really hard. And 1,000 different broadcasters pronounce his name 1,000 different ways as they go back through all the stories done about him. But yeah, if you know the guy and you know the story, rang a lot of bells. It's really, really good. Check it out. Number three on Netflix, it's called Crack. It's just a documentary about crack. Crack was damaging. Crack was not good.
Yeah, my daughter displayed that for her parents, and it was profoundly educational.
Yeah, it's really good. It was really, really well done. What a disaster it was. But I recommend Crack. Someone's like, Netflix, those three are on Netflix. Did I say Ted Lasso was on Netflix? No, I didn't. It's on Apple Prime. You go. And I said the next three are on Netflix. So there you go. Stop policing my totally accurate statements. My fourth recommendation to you. My Octopus Teacher.
Yeah.
Have you guys seen this?
I tried to tell Kolsky about this a couple months ago.
What are you talking about? I've watched this.
I didn't say you didn't. I warned you a couple months ago. Big fan.
I tried to tell Kolsky. Yes.
He refused to watch something he enjoyed.
Very enjoyable. I mean, the guy has a relationship with the octopus that inspires a lot of questions, but it's beautifully shot and it's a fascinating story. And I learned a lot about octopi.
It's a man in the ocean. It's incredible.
Well, and the other thing is, it shows you that that an octopus might be among the smartest creatures on the planet.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you think the octopus would have liked Ted Lasso? I think he would have, Ray.
Definitely.
No, I think the octopus would have known that that started as an ad campaign by NBC, and he would have seen it for the thinly papered commercial that it is.
But for what, NBC thing, Sports? There's not. What are you talking about?
That's how it started. It was an ad campaign.
But that proves that you didn't give the thing a chance.
Yeah,
if
you don't
watch the actual show, that was one of the things that I found so exceptional about it, is that this dumb idea that started as a goofy advertising campaign became a show with all this heart that really spoke to like humanity and people and was so enjoyable.
Yeah, it's like if you found
humanity
out
humanity and people, two things I am adamantly opposed to.
It's like finding out the Catalina wine mixer is real and being like, well, I wouldn't want to go there. It's great. It's great.
Catalina wine mixer.
Anyway, coming up next, it's our good friend Matt Barnes here on 95.7 The Game. Did we just become best friends? In the meantime, we are brought to you, Damon Ratto and Kolsky and Ted Lasso and the Octopus. We are brought to you by the Exergen Accuracy Temperature Check, which matters. Get a $5 rebate by trading up to any non-contact thermometer towards an Exergen purchase at any retailer because, of course, accuracy matters. When checking for a fever, that's how you keep your family safe. Unlike non-contact thermometers, Exergen's accuracy is backed by more than 80 published clinical studies. Visit Exergen.com, our Exergen Temperature Check, because accuracy indeed does matter, tells us right now. It's 64 degrees in beautiful downtown Oakland. Stay tuned. Matt Barnes next.
Now back to Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky on 95.7 The Game.
Good to have you back here on 95.7 The Game. Earlier today, Matt Barnes, the host of All the Smoke podcast, one of the best out there, former Golden State Warrior and friend of the show, stopped on by to talk about Draymond and everything going on in the NBA. Matt Barnes, how are you?
Oh, well, how about yourself?
We're doing really, really well, thank you. Better than the Warriors, who had a couple of rough losses in Orlando and then in Charlotte. They let double-digit fourth quarters slip through their fingers. In Charlotte, they didn't have Steph Curry the entire game, who was a late scratch. And Draymond Green decided to scratch himself from the end of that game because he couldn't keep his emotions in check. And I feel like we've told this story once or twice before. What did you think of how the Warriors let one go in Charlotte on Saturday night, Matt?
It's a tough situation. You know, learning to win in closeout games is important for teams. Obviously, you know, we're accustomed to this championship dynasty team that is filled with veterans and makes everything look easy. But, you know, those days are over. You know, Clay's on the sidelines still. Steph is playing great, but he, you know, with him being a late scratch, that's going to put them behind the eight ball. But it's still, you know, no excuse to blow fourth quarter leads with or without him. So, like I said, normally you would have another calming presence in there, you know, outside of Steph, and Draymond is off and on as far as calming, but he's definitely a presence. But they missed the veteran leadership of the Iguodalas, the Sean Livingstons, the David West, to kind of help teach these guys how to close games, because it's not as easy as it sounds. A lot of younger teams go through stuff like this, and outside of Draymond and Steph, this is a fairly young team. So it's just the process of growing and struggling, and you know, it'll all pay dividends next season.
In terms of Draymond Green, you know, people like to talk about, you know, his high motor and his, you know, occasional volatility. Is that something that for most players, I'm not asking you to be an expert on Draymond, but for most players, is it more difficult to turn that volatility on and off than it seems to outsiders?
I wouldn't call it necessarily volatility. I would call it just it's who he is. It's what makes him great, but it also can be his downfall. And, you know, I was similar in that aspect of my career. You know, we play with so much passion, love, and energy that we kind of feel like in certain situations, you know, whether we're right or we're wrong, we know if we're going to get beat, let us get beat, but don't take it away from us. And I think that's where he kind of felt, you know, obviously last game that he was ejected, it was taken away with the call. But, you know, he and I talked later that night, and I told him, you know, it's just something, although he may have felt like it's right, it's something from his point of view and his position on this team now that can't be done, and he completely understood it. But it's not something you can turn all the way off. You got to take the good and the great with the sometimes bad, and that's what you get with Draymond, because, like I said, this organization wouldn't be who they are without Draymond Green's passion and energy behind it.
You know, we all have a ton of respect for Draymond and feel the same way as what you just said at the end there. But like you just said, this is something that you struggled with to some extent in your career.
Yep.
How do you make sure that while you're keeping your fire and your energy, you don't cross that line in that situation?
Yeah, I mean, you never want to hurt your team in any aspect. And obviously, you know, losing him hurts the team. But also, you know, the two free throws they got to tie the game hurt them. And it's just, it comes with maturity, you know what I mean? And not to say he's not mature, but he's continuing to grow. And he understands his faults. And he admitted his faults, I think, in an interview talking about what happened last game. So it's just a process. You know, he's giving you much more good than he's giving bad. And I just think right now is, you know, during these last two games, they let slip away. Obviously, this is going to be a talking point. But at the end of the day, he does a lot more good, you know, that is outside the numbers that he does that are bad, that is bad.
You played with I think it was one of the MVP years alongside Steph Curry. Coming here from another place and sort of being dropped into this team, how long did it take for you to figure out sort of the right way to play when Steph is on the floor? Because it seems like one of the themes with this team has been it's different than anyone else, so it takes a little time.
Not only did I have to learn to play with Steph, but I had to learn to play with Clay as well. And KD for a brief second, but the game he came back, I got hurt, and I was pretty much done the rest of the season. But it is different. You know, it really is different. You got to find Steph. Find a way to get him the ball, find a way to get him open, understand his activity on the court, understand how he uses screens when he's a screener, understand how to screen with him. You know, I came here later in my career, you know, so my basketball IQ was on point, and I had always been a fan of the way they played anyway. You know, so for me to fit in, it wasn't hard for me to fit in, but you just have to understand how to play with special shooters like that. You know, I had obviously I'm not comparing the two, but, you know, playing with J.J. Redick when I was with the Lob City Clipper team. You know, me being the starting small forward, I had to know how to get him open and play off him because he was our best shooter. So, you know, carrying over to what Steph does for this team, and really, he's the lone gun. You know, I mean, obviously, Wiggins and Oubre can score, but when you're talking about get you a bucket, Steph is the guy you're going to go to. So you do have to really watch and understand how he moves around, and I think that's what makes Draymond so great is their connection and their chemistry to where, you know, Draymond's almost a Tom Brady figure out there, and Steph is a Randy Moss type player where he can really read and react and understand Steph's movements and what's going to happen when Steph sets an up pick compared to what he's going to do when he sets a down pick, and just the nuances of the game, because every time he shoots the ball, I think it's going in, whether I played with him or against him.
Text line says, I love Matt Barnes. Well, so do we. That's why we're thrilled to have him back on here on 95.7 The Game. So where is the truth about the Brooklyn Nets? Are they the world-beaten team that can outscore anybody, don't even need Kevin Durant to go undefeated on a West Coast road trip? Are they that good, or are they a team that plays no defense, so no matter how good they are, we still can't take them that seriously? Where's the truth on the Brooklyn Nets?
I think we're starting to edge more on the serious side, understanding that, you know, although what we got a chance to witness and I got a chance to play with in Golden State with Steph, Clay, and KD, this trio might be a better scoring trio than those guys, and that's saying a lot. You know, this could be the best scoring trio we've ever seen in the game. When they get there, I have no doubt that they'll get their offensive chemistry down. I think we're really starting to see that. They've been the number one offense since James jumped in there. But they're starting to understand how important the defense is, and they hear people talking about how bad their defense is. They see their defensive numbers, and they realize that defense is nothing more than effort and energy and being on the same page, and you're starting to see them step that up. I think what they really need, they need to bolster that front line, whether that's getting, you know, a center in JaVale McGee or Andre Drummond, or strengthening it, you know, with a power forward. But, you know, if you get DeAndre Jordan in any kind of foul trouble, their center position is KD and Jeff Green. And although that's good on the offensive end, that's going to be a liability on the defensive end in securing rebounds.
Matt Barnes here on 95.7 The Game. Always great to catch up with him again. All the Smoke podcast, one of the best in the business. Speaking of that, so is Peter King. Thanks to him for joining us earlier today. To everyone who called in for our Not-So-Stupid Questions segment, great stuff. Thank you. Join us tomorrow. We're back for an hour to get you ready for Warriors and New York Knicks at Madison Square Garden. Until then, thanks very much for listening for the boys. Matt and Ray. For the boys back in the studio, Lucas and Nash, thank you so much for tuning in today. I'm Damon Bruce reminding you that sports don't build character, they reveal it.
And like that, he's gone. DSC.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.